Hey, everybody. Welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. Today, we will be continuing our AL East preview crossover episodes here on the Locked On Podcast Network, as today we will take a look at the Yankees, the defending AL East champs who made it to the American League Championship Series last year. And of course, the Astros took them out in six games as Houston, trash cans and all, went on to the World Series last year. And the Yankees have fallen short and have been very close to the World Series two out of the last 3 years, but they finish off that last decade without a World Series. And we will talk to Stacy Gatsoulias, the host of Locked On Yankees here on the Locked On Podcast Network, about the Yanks and about the Orioles as we have a little back and forth on this crossover episode. So our Locked On MLB crossover episode between the Orioles and the Yankees here. Connor Newcomb here from Locked On Orioles. Stacy Gatsoulias from Locked On Yankees as we talk about two teams that, if things probably go the way people expect them to, I think you'll agree they'll probably finish at opposite ends of the AL East standings this year.
Probably. But you never know, you know.
Well, yeah, you never know. I mean, the Rays could pull something off. I don't think the Orioles will finish above fifth, but the Rays, you know, could maybe knock the Yankees out of first, but kind of starting, you know, with the Yankees, between these two teams, I'm sure that's the team people want to hear more about. But with New York coming off of a season in which they went to the ALCS and who knows, may have gone to the World Series if not for some trash cans and video cameras. But I'm assuming the goal around the team and the hope of the fans this year is they've got pretty much the same core group back and they're thinking it's World Series or bust in 2020.
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, they've had a couple of chances to get to the World Series in the last 3 years and just missed. I mean, 2017 was really, I couldn't believe what that team did in the playoffs. And the fact that they were within a game of going to the World Series was a miracle, sort of, especially after that one meltdown against Cleveland. I didn't even think they were going to come back in that series. So, you know, the fact that they're back to being the Yankees and making the playoffs, but not quite getting to the World Series yet. You know, Yankee fans are an impatient bunch, and this latest drought is now 10 years. So, you know, these kids who grew up with the 90s Yankees are really, they don't know what to do when the Yankees don't win the World Series.
Yeah. Oh no. 10 years without a World Series. It must be horrendous. it must be awful, but you know, they're kind of building what seems to be a similar core, but you know, instead of like a core four, it's almost they're getting more production from guys who aren't going to end up in the Hall of Fame. And so I kind of want to ask you one more thing about the Yankees before we maybe get into the Orioles. Mm-hmm. The Gio Urshelas of the world, the Luke Voits of the world from last year, the Mike Talkmans of the world from last year, even as far down as Cameron Maybin and what he was able to do last year. Is the expectation that they come back and produce the same, you think? Or is it more of, wow, we got that much out of them. Now imagine what we'll do with the, you know, real healthy nine that we wanted to have throughout 2019.
Well, with the way 2020 is beginning, we're not going to have a healthy nine to start. But last year was just, it was, I really still don't know how that team won 103 wins or got 103 wins with 39 IL trips and 30 different guys. Oh no, was it 39 and 30 were the numbers of IL trips, guys on the IL, and any other team would have finished fourth, third in the AL East with that many injuries to that many significant players. You know, you lose Luis Severino for most of the year. You lose Giancarlo Stanton for most of the year. You lose Aaron Judge for a couple of months, Gary Sanchez. And then you, like you said, you have these guys who come out of nowhere. You know, Luke Voit, we saw a little bit of him in 2018, so they were expecting some from him. But, you know, they sign these guys like Cameron Maybin, and Edwin Encarnacion comes in. He hits a bunch of home runs. Gio Urshela, they traded him for cash in 2018, and he comes in and plays like an all-star. You know, I think it would be foolish for people to think that the Yankees could replicate that kind of performance if the same sort of thing happens injury-wise in 2020. But then again, I wouldn't be surprised if they did. But I'm kind of hoping that all the injuries that they have now are the only injuries that they'll have, and that guys will come back when they're expected to come back, and there's not this whole, oh, he had a setback, oh, he had another setback, oh, he injured something else, like Dellin Betances just kept injuring new things all year. Stanton, same thing. You know, I don't see 103 wins, definitely not. I would like to see between 95 and 100, maybe like 97, something like that. But yeah, last year was just, it was basically a miracle.
Well, on the flip side for the Orioles, they could have inverse records, the Orioles and the Yankees this year. It was close last year as the Yankees went 103-59 and the Orioles ended up 54-108. And I think for the O's, it's similar this year, probably going to fall somewhere between 50 and 60 wins. Maybe they can avoid 100 losses, so maybe get into the low 60s. But I think kind of the questions that maybe Yankees fans want to know about the Orioles are probably, you know, in a much different tone about, you know, who's really going to be there. But are there players that Yankee fans worry about getting beat by with the Orioles? And what do Yankee fans kind of want to know about the 2020 O's? Because even for Orioles fans, there's a lot of questions like, who are these guys?
I'm trying to think of players that I just remember, you know, a few years ago. I felt like Jonathan Scope kept getting big hits against the Yankees and I couldn't stand him. you know, so like who else? Like guys like Chris Davis every once in a while. But I think Yankee fans are just wondering if Gleyber Torres is going to have a repeat performance against Orioles pitching in 2020.
I mean, there's a good chance Gleyber Torres sent Gary Thorne, our TV broadcaster, into just a void, basically, when when Torres would hit. And Gary, just along with all of us, could not believe what was going on. And, you know, Gleyber Torres, if he never played the Orioles, would have still had a great 2019. But yeah, they elevated him from good player with solid future to, oh my goodness, is this guy going to win the next five MVPs when he would play the Orioles?
My favorite call from Thorne last year was, I believe it was a home run in Baltimore that went right field and it just barely made it into, like, it didn't go to Utah Street, but Gary Thorne literally went gah when the ball landed. And I'm like, Gleyber Torres is sucking Gary Thorne's soul out of his body this year.
Yeah, he basically, that was the closest to, yeah, he almost killed him basically this year. And I think maybe he might be a little more ready for Gleyber. Mm-hmm. But if Torres goes deep on opening day at Camden Yards, it's just going to start a bad cycle again for Gary Thorne, I think.
Well, I think it was funny because, I always conflate 2017, 2018, but I think it was 2017 when Judge hit all those home runs. Didn't he have a lot against Baltimore also?
He did, but I just feel like it wasn't as many as Gleyber had last year.
Yeah, Gleyber had a lot. It was, what was it, 13?
Yeah, it's a number I don't want to think about, but probably.
When you were talking about the records being like inverted or whatever, I think the Astros were 108-54 last season. So I think Baltimore had the opposite of them.
So they had the inverse. Well, this season the expectations are kind of similar for the Orioles, between 50 and 60 again, as I said. They really, it's kind of interesting to look at the Orioles. They, you know, you feel like they haven't added anyone because they haven't, but you also, you know, probably from the outside looking in, it probably looks like, oh, they really haven't lost anybody because they didn't make any big trades in the offseason. But if you really look deeper and you look at Baseball Reference and their WAR statistic, the Orioles lost three out of their six top win players from last year. The saddest part of that is number five is Andrew Cashner, who they traded at the deadline to the Red Sox, and he still ended up number five on that list. Dylan Bundy was number six. They traded him to the Angels. And Jonathan Villar, who many could argue was the Orioles' best player last year, was number two on that list. They traded him for basically nothing to the Marlins. And because they didn't add anything, a lot of people argue that, you know, a lot of their young players maybe develop a little bit more and they bring up some prospects, which gives them a spark to win more games in 54. But I honestly look at it as they might win less than 54 this year just because of what they lost. And now Trey Mancini is dealing with this medical issue, and there's a lot of questions surrounding, you know, if he'll be ready to play by the beginning of the season. Obviously, for him, the big thing is, you know, it hasn't been disclosed what's going on with him medically, and it's not really a baseball injury thing. It's much more than that. So people are just worried about his well-being in general. And then the second part behind that is, you know, can he – play baseball this season? And he's by far the Orioles' best hitter. So especially if he's out for some time, this could be a team that — now I know the Yankees beat up on them pretty badly last year, but this could be a team where, you know, the Rays really get to beat up on them. And if the Blue Jays are competitive, they really get to beat up on them. And it could be a season where, because Toronto is probably closer to being back and the Red Sox are still going to be competitive, it could be lower than 54 wins. Do you hate stepping on the scale? Maybe it's because you haven't met the right one. A company called Withings produced the world's first smart scale, and they are still the best. In fact, Tom's Guide rated Withings Body Plus the best overall smart scale in 2020. If you're looking to lose weight, willpower is key, but so is having the right tools. Withings smart scales are known for durability and an exceptional user-friendly design. Step on and data from every weigh-in syncs automatically to the free app for iOS and Android via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Lots of smart scales don't have the Wi-Fi option, and it means you need to have your phone on you. But Withings Body Plus gives weight, full body composition, weight trend, even a local weather report. The scale can support up to 8 users and even know who is who. So here's the deal. You can get 25% off a Withings Body Plus right now at withings.com for a very limited time. Go to withings.com, that's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off Body Plus Body Composition Scale. That's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off Body Plus Body Composition Scale.
Now, I was looking at Baseball Reference just because I was looking at the Orioles in the past, and, you know, there was a big run there of, you know, fourth out of five, fifth out of five from, say, 2000 to 2011. And then 2012, you guys do really well. I mean, really, I remember that season being really nerve-wracking for us as Yankee fans, because you guys were on our tails the entire last month of the season. And then that crazy ALDS. And then you had a run there of every other year going into the playoffs. And then now it's back to being fifth out of five. So how does that — like, you had that small little window of, I would say, success. I mean, you guys made it into the playoffs. You made it into the ALCS in 2014. Like, how frustrated are you with the fact that you guys kind of had this tease of a window and now you're back to being in the bottom of the AL East after being competitive for those like 5 years?
Yeah, it's tough. From actually in that 5 year stretch from 2012 to 2016, the Orioles made the playoffs every year, never had a losing record in that stretch. Actually had the most wins in the American League over that 5 year stretch. It helped out that the Yankees were down in that stretch kind of after 2012, and then after Jeter got hurt in the playoffs, and they had those weird teams where they had a bunch of like 37-year-old guys who were way past their prime. The Orioles took advantage of that, and they won the division in 2014, went to the ALCS that year. Had they not run into the Royals just bulldozing everyone in the American League that year, they may have been in the World Series. But, you know, it was interesting because in 2017, you know, they didn't make the playoffs, but they were — I think, a game out of the wild card going into September in 2017, mm-hmm. and then just fell apart like I've never seen before. They might have won like six or seven games in September, and actually ended up, I believe, with a losing record that year.
Yeah.
Or something close to it. And then in 2018, of course, instead of trading off Manny Machado and Jonathan Scope and guys like that in the offseason, they held on to him, maybe thinking there's one last ride here, and became really bad. And it probably hurt them that they held on to those guys a little too long, traded them all at the deadline and got a little less for them. And it probably set the rebuild back a little bit. But the Orioles were always kind of hanging on by a thread because they never really had that ace starting pitcher. And they were, you know, it was a great bullpen team that hit a lot of homers, but struck out a lot and didn't have great starting pitching. And they never had a good farm system either. So as soon as they started losing a little bit at the major leagues, there was nobody coming up behind those major league guys to back them up. And so it's a little better now than I think that stretch you talked about, which was from 98 to 2011, where they never made the playoffs, because they middled some of those years and the farm system still wasn't good. This year, the Orioles are going to have probably a top 10 farm system for the first time in my lifetime. And it's been a while since they've had a top 10 farm system. And so that should, you know, give fans more excitement. I think it is giving fans more excitement. Now, on the flip side, they're not going to be anywhere close to competing until at least 2022. However, there's more excitement knowing there's a plan. Now, we hope all signs point to this, and we hope that Mike Elias really wasn't involved with the Astros cheating when he was there. Nobody's really named him and anything, which has been good. And so people see Mike Elias from the Astros knowing how they turned things around initially before they got the trash cans out. And so the hope is that he can get the Orioles at least to that point where Houston kind of made the playoffs that first year. I believe it was around 2015.
Yeah.
And then after that, not having to cheat and continue to build to get to that next level. So that's kind of the hope. It's just so many years away that it does get a little frustrating.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, we are in 2020, which is, I say it all the time, I am mind boggled by the fact that we're in 2020. Because when I was a kid, I say this all the time, people always look to 2000 as, ooh, you know, 2000 is the future. But I always looked to 2020 and thought that by 2020, we'd at least start building moon colonies and stuff and fun things would be happening, and it hasn't happened yet, and I'm really disappointed.
Well, you know what, it might be a disappointing decade for you, but for Orioles fans it actually ended up being kind of, now 2000 to 2010 not good, but 2010 to 2020 ended up being good for Orioles fans because A, they won a division for the first time in forever, they were competitive for the first half of it, and B, the Yankees didn't win a World Series. So overall it became good for everyone involved in the Orioles. But I kind of want to go back to the Yankee side of things. And, you know, we talked about the guys who were, you know, fill-ins last year, basically, who turned themselves almost into all-stars. But for the Yankees, and we know they might be hurt again, but the guys who are really going to be in the middle of their lineup and do the destruction of every other team while Gleyber Torres destroys the Orioles are Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, but it looks like neither of them will be ready for opening day. Is that right?
Yeah. Judge is sitting for 2 weeks because of his stress fracture in his rib that apparently happened in September and they didn't find out until this week. Seems the Yankees medical staff is still stellar like last year. Giancarlo Stanton, they said, is starting to hit again, starting to run again. So it's possible he may be back for the opening series at Yankee Stadium, but probably not opening day.
So the Orioles might have a chance here with those two guys out. Of course, the two teams meet in Baltimore to start the season March 26th. And then my other question becomes, with all these guys who played so well last year, but now, you know, you have the guys like Judge will be back. Stanton should be back at some point. Gardner is back. And, you know, guys like Andujar as well. Do some of these, like, success stories from last year, just because of options and how many guys the Yankees have, are they going to end up having to trade or put a couple of these guys on waivers just because there's so many of them that have competed at the major league level, but there's just guys coming back from injury now?
Yeah, they have a plethora of outfielders right now. You know, and they're also adding Andujar into that because of Gio Urshela doing so well at third and Andujar not doing great. You know, he wasn't great defensively in 2018. It was his bat that was really out of this world. And they had him play, I think he's played left field 4 times already in spring training, and he's been okay. I joked about how the first time they put him in left field, the first ball hit was to him, because that's usually what happens. And he made the catch with no problem. But they're trying him out in right as well, because, you know, with Judge, they don't know what's going to happen with him, because after the 2 weeks, it could be, hey, he needs surgery to remove the rib, or, hey, he might be coming back. So they're testing Andujar all around, because they don't want to get his, they don't want to leave his bat out of the lineup. He's one of their best hitters. So they're hoping that he can be the, you know, jack of all trade player who can play a number of positions. If they need to stick him in at first, they can. If they need him to DH, he will. If they can put him in probably left and right, definitely not center. You know, I don't know about waivers. I don't even know about people's options. You know, one guy I feel bad about is Clint Frazier, because he always seems to be the odd man out, but he's another one with defensive issues. You know, if you're an outfielder and you can't play your position, you don't really have a place on the team, even if you can hit the ball. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do with him out of everyone when Stanton and if Judge, if they both come back when the Yankees are hoping that they come back.
And you talk outfield, you know, when you look at the Orioles on the other side of things, it's kind of their only exciting spot on the field right now, as far as guys who are actually in the major leagues at the moment and will be in 2020. If you're looking at, you know, where on the Orioles will you find excitement / good baseball / I don't know, maybe someone you want on your fantasy baseball team, you probably should look in the outfield and stay in the outfield for the Orioles. Trey Mancini will be an outfielder. Obviously, the hope is he'll be ready and good and medically cleared for opening day, and he'll be the guy. You know, 35 home runs last year, snubbed from the All-Star team. He's a great player. But beside him, Austin Hayes, who's a young center fielder who's going to come up and be the opening day center fielder, he's had a really good end to his season last year when he came back up in the big leagues in August and September, and a great defender. Power back and hit 25 or 30 homers. And then Anthony Santander, who kind of came out of nowhere last year for the Orioles and ended up having a pretty good season last year, in 93 games, hit 261 and was a 20 home run guy. Those three in the outfield kind of make the Orioles outfield somewhat exciting, because they're three guys that, if they do commit to all of them, could be long-term guys, or at least two of them could be long-term guys. But Stacey, other than that, it's somewhat barren when you look through the Orioles roster.
Now, are you worried like I am about them possibly changing the baseballs?
Changing them back to non-juice balls?
Yeah.
Well, I will say the Orioles will not have the same numbers. Renato Nunez, a waiver claim, who was just kind of a depth guy to bring into the Orioles last year, hit 31 home runs last season. I think he had like 8 career homers before then. So I don't think he would like to see the juice balls go. And if they do change it, now R2 ballparks, Yankee Stadium and Camden Yards, they're still going to be home runs either way.
Sure.
But guys like Renato Nunez for the Orioles are not going to hit 31 home runs again if those baseballs get changed back.
Yeah, because I was thinking of Brett Gardner. I mean, he had a career number last year in home runs, and he's Yankees oldest player. And I mean, I've seen him hit home runs in person. I was at a game one time when he hit a walk off and I couldn't even believe it, because when he first came up, he just would slap the ball. And to see him hit, what was it, 26, 28, something like that last year, it was like, what? I'm like, that definitely has to be the juiced ball. So I don't see him replicating that this season. I could see, you know, 15, 16, 17 maybe, but I don't see him, you know, competing with someone like Judge or Stanton or even Torres for most home runs. And also DJ LeMahieu. You know, when the Yankees signed him, they were expecting him to be a utility player. He didn't even start opening day. And he had like an MVP season out of Coors. And I think his previous two seasons combined were 15 and 8 home runs, and he had 26 last year. How does that happen?
It was include him and all those guys who just, not that he came out of nowhere. He was a really good player in Colorado, but just came out of nowhere to hit more homers and beat everyone. And I thought last year would be the year they got back to the World Series, but it could be this year, because I do want to talk about pitching a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to me the high versus the low. The high as a Yankees fan of signing Gerrit Cole, knowing you might have the best pitcher in baseball right now at this moment. There's an argument to be made about Cole. Mm-hmm. And then the low of just recently finding out that, you know, you thought you had all these aces in the rotation, and then one drops with Luis Severino getting injured.
Well, I really felt bad for Sevy because, you know, last season was pretty much a lost season. He didn't make his first start until September. And it was, you know, first we found out about James Paxton needing back surgery, and it was like, okay, he'll be gone for the first 2 months. Okay, they can deal with that. And as soon as they said that he, Sevy, felt the pain in his forearm when he was pitching his changeup, I was like, ew, like that sounds like that doesn't sound good. So I wasn't shocked by the Tommy John surgery. I was just, after all the injuries last year and everything that happened, it was kind of like, I mean, it was a low point, but it was also almost expected and kind of like, yeah, okay, I could have seen this coming. You know, you get the one good thing and then boom, the bottom drops out of you. But, you know, signing Gerrit Cole after last year, me complaining about the Yankees not really getting any, like, I really wanted them to sign Machado. I really did. I was lobbying for that all last preseason. Basically, my entire podcast was just me begging the Yankees to sign Machado, and then they didn't. And, you know, they didn't sign a whole bunch of other people that were out, you know, because last offseason was very strange with all these guys not signing until March, not signing until the season started, like Dallas Keuchel and, you know, Bryce Harper was signed late also. And so this season, you know, signing Gerrit Cole and him choosing the Yankees, because, you know, I did have that little inkling thinking, oh, no, he's going to want to go home to Southern California and someone like the Angels are going to scoop him up. So I was thrilled. And so far he looks good. I mean, he did get bombed the other day, but he came out today and he pitched well. So I'm not worried about him. I'm excited to watch him pitch. From all accounts from the beat writers, he loves talking about pitching and he likes talking with his fellow pitchers about pitching. So if he can rub off on any of the other guys that are in the rotation, that would be really great too. But yeah, I was shocked and very happy that they signed Gerrit Cole. It was like they were the Yankees again.
And of course the rich get richer with him, and he could be the guy. Maybe he gets him over the hump and past what still could most definitely be the Astros in the ALCS again this year. But when you flip over to Orioles pitching, John Means, the left-hander who was the Orioles lone all-star last year, but a lot of people don't even remember that because he did not get into the actual All-Star game to pitch. He was noted by Alex Cora as being the extra innings guy, just in case it got to extra innings. So Orioles fans ended up not very happy about that. They got one All-Star and didn't even get to see him play in the game. But he had a good year, and he'll start opening day most likely against the Yankees on March 26th. Behind that, the resurrection, hopefully, of Alex Cobb, who basically has missed the last year and a half with injury. Yankees fans will remember when he was good on the Rays, and they'll probably remember hitting him hard since he's been an Oriole. The hope will be maybe he's back, and then Asher Wojciechowski and Wade LeBlanc, names people might know and might not know, and that's kind of how the Orioles are built right now, go behind him. Not a lot to be excited about for Orioles pitching right now, but that's kind of the main thing around the Orioles right now. It's not excited right now, but if you just can daydream about the 2022 roster and all the prospects they have, and that's maybe the time when they can start to compete again with teams like the Yankees because of the exciting prospects they have. And it's not just Adley Rutschman, last year's number one pick. There's a lot of guys in that system who a lot of people are really excited about.
Do you trust your ownership to do right by those guys?
I do. I think with Mike Elias in there from the Astros, I think he'll know how to handle these younger guys and when to bring them up. Cause I mean, Houston did a really good job of when to bring guys up and when to maximize them. And you know, I'm not a fan of all the service time manipulation that doesn't allow guys to get their money when they should. There's obviously a little part of me that wants them Orioles for longer so they can try and win some games, but I'd like for them to be able to have more control over when they make money. But some of these guys should be up in the next couple of years, and I think the ownership will handle it well because I think they're all on the same page of, look, we're not going to go get anybody yet. We're going to let these guys develop and see what they can do at the big league level, and then the guys we sign will maybe sign around them. Because I think the Orioles think they have their stars, you know, basically in Double A in 2020, which means, you know, they're maybe 2 years away from coming to the big leagues.
Yeah. Trying to think of the Yankees, who they have. They have some guys. Jason Dominguez, everyone's talking about. He's really young, but he's built like he's 25. My favorite fact about him, even though it's J-A-S-S-O-N, he was named after Jason Giambi.
A fantastic Yankee.
Yes. Yeah, people always underrate Giambi's time with the Yankees, but he did pretty well.
And I do want to ask about one more Yankee before we finish up our crossover episode here. It's a guy who was an Orioles fan favorite, and not just because fans liked him for him, but because he was the best reliever in baseball for about 2 years at one point there. And that's Zach Britton, who's gone over there and now is no longer a closer, really, because Chapman has that role locked down. But I know Britton's numbers, and it's hard to duplicate what he did a couple years ago with Baltimore when he saved every single game and had like a 0.5 ERA. Have Yankee fans been a little disappointed with him because of how dominant he was as an Oriole, or are they still happy with having that incredible sinker in the eighth inning?
I think there are some instances when they're disappointed. You know, sometimes when he walks too many people, but I like him a lot. You know, Yankee fans really shouldn't be complaining about the bullpen at all, because even without Dellin Betances, it's still a really good bullpen. And I didn't realize how funny Zach Britton was, because obviously I wouldn't have known that from him being on the Orioles, because I wouldn't really have paid attention to him in that way. But now that he's on the Yankees and seeing how he conducts himself, he's really funny. And I like that this group of Yankees have fun with each other. You know, it was always like when Jeter was still a Yankee, he mellowed out toward the end of his career, but they were very businesslike, you know, when they were winning in the 90s and the 2000s, and they weren't having as much fun as they are now. And I like these groups of guys and how they support each other and make fun of each other and just have a lot of fun. And, you know, I think Britton's great. I mean, like you said, he's not going to replicate that year. That year was absolutely mind-bogglingly incredible. Yeah, it was just unbelievable. And even as a Yankee fan watching it, it was like, wow, this kid is unbelievable. But yes, I do like his sinker.
A lot of people do. So I want to get both of our takes on this before we finish up. The Yankees and the Orioles will play 19 times this year. I think we can both agree the Yankees will win that season series. But how many out of 19 do you think New York takes from Baltimore this year?
Well, was it 17 and 2 last year?
I believe so.
Poof. Wow.
And I think the only two were that the Orioles won were at Yankee Stadium.
That's funny. And it was the beginning of the year.
Yep, that four-game series, they won two of them at the beginning of the year.
That's right. And everyone was flipping out because, oh my God, they're starting, like Yankee fans were flipping out saying, oh my God, they're starting so bad. They're losing to all these bad teams. And then they turn things around. I'll go 13-6 Yankees.
I'm going to say the Orioles dig up a little dignity and they get one at Camden Yards this year and they add one at Yankee Stadium. So I'll say 15-4 Yankees.
Yeah, it might be the same start as last year, you know, or the Orioles could win the first series.
I mean, I'll just take winning on opening day against them. If that's going to be their only win over the Yankees at Camden Yards this year.
And they don't scare at Cole because he's supposed to be, he's lined up to start opening day.
Right, exactly. If they were to win on opening day, they can be over 500 for probably the only time this season and beat Garrett Cole. I think I would take that. But yeah, that's a look at two teams who will finish, as we said at the beginning, on very opposite ends of the standings. One team going for a World Series and one team might be going for the number one pick. So again, our thanks to Stacey Gatsoulias from Locked On Yankees. Sure, it won't be the last time we have her on the podcast to talk some Yankees in the AL East as our crossover episodes continue. Look forward to tomorrow where we have Gabrielle Starr on the pod. The two of us will go back and forth for a little Red Sox and Orioles crossover episode. And we'll talk a lot about Mookie Betts and why in the world the Red Sox made that trade, sending him to the Dodgers earlier this offseason. So again, the content continues here as we wait for baseball to come back here in the U.S. And as our content continues, remember, we are doing greatest Oriole of all time bracket. We've posted the first round matchups on our Twitter account yesterday. We started over on the right side of the bracket, and that will continue today as the newest groups of voting is out. So make sure to head over to our Twitter account at Locked On Orioles to submit your votes today. And you can vote today for these four matchups. You've got Milt Pappas versus Jim Gentile, Brady Anderson against Dick Hall, Miguel Tejada against Gary Renicky, and Paul Blair versus Zach Britton. Those are the four first-round matchups we've got today. All chalk so far in the bracket. We've only had one upset in the first round. That was 9-seed Mike Cuellar over 8-seed Mike Boddicker. Everything else has been chalk. We'll see if we get some upsets. If not, maybe in the later rounds of the bracket. But make sure to continue to vote on Twitter at Locked On Orioles. But until then, we'll see you tomorrow for our Orioles and Red Sox crossover episode here on the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.